Before I start, I'd like to read you this from an article. It was in the Western Farm Press. From the Western Farm Press in early 2005. The headline read, Cost Nudge West to Conservation Tillage. The article says, purists have run the notion of conservation tillage up the flagpole before in the West, only to see it hang limp from a lack of interest. Less than 0.5% of row crop farming in the far West is under conservation tillage. In fact, conservation tillage in the far West is an oxymoron. As hard as many have tried, few in the West have made true row crop conservation tillage or no-till work until now. The dollar bill and dwindling supply thereof is the driving force behind perhaps the first widespread serious attempt at making conservation tillage work in the far West. The far West that they're referring to here are the arid irrigated regions of Arizona, California, Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. And when this article was being written in 2005, it had just started a high residue farming extension program for Washington State University Extension in Washington. At that time, I knew of two practitioners in my area of these types of systems. They were both doing strip-till sweet corn. Well, since then, we've learned a lot, and we've had farmers adopt systems, so I'm going to talk a little bit about those. We've also come across a challenge that I'm going to talk about and also an opportunity that have to do with our unique climate. So that's where I'm going to start. I work in the Columbia Basin, which is central Washington and northern Oregon here. This is the Cascade Mountains, so we're on the east side of the Cascade Mountains, which means we're in the rain shadow of the mountains. We're right here in this red area. Our annual precipitation is between 5 and 9 inches. There's similar areas down here in the Treasure Valley of Oregon and Idaho, and in the Magic Valley of South Central Idaho, where we have similar crops, similar climates, and we're in a similar stage of moving towards these conservation tillage systems. Because of our low precipitation, our native shrub step vegetation does not produce very much biomass, and therefore the soils that have formed under that shrub step have very low soil organic matter levels. Generally, they're from 0.3 to 1%. In our silt loams, you get up above 1%, maybe 1.6 is about the highest I've seen in an ag field in my region. And because of those low soil organic matter levels, we have problems with hydrophobic soils, we have problems with infiltration, even in our sandy soils. We don't have any aggregation to speak of, and because of that, when you till the soil, it recompacts fairly rapidly. So a little bit about our cropping systems. As you can imagine, it's all irrigated. We can't grow anything on 5 to 9 inches. And most of our irrigation is through center pivots. So we've got overhead irrigation, which makes it a lot easier to move towards these high residue systems than if you had a surface irrigation system like they have here in California. Our crops, I picked 2007, they vary all over depending on the market. There's no set crop rotation in our area. We have a large variety of crops that farmers choose from. Our high residue crops are generally wheat and grain corn, but we grow potatoes. Potatoes is a big cash crop in our area, kind of drives the system. And we have processed vegetables, sweet corns, and green peas that are frozen vegetables, and we have fresh onions. Our yields, generally winter wheat, 150 bushels per acre, grain corn, 250 bushels per acre, and we have, according to the sign at the county line, we have the highest potato yields in the country at 33 tons per acre on average. Before 2005, and actually since then, most of these crops are raised in clean tillage systems. We have a lot of moldboard plowing still with no residue left on the soil surface, and because of that, we have occasional problems with wind erosion. This is a photo that NASA was nice enough to take from a May 3rd wind event that we had in our area. You can see the dust coming off the irrigated circles here, blowing across and up towards Spokane. It closed down Interstate 90 for a while. We had some accidents. People with respiratory problems don't like this up in the more populated areas. So there is some pressure on farmers to limit these events. But that being said, I agree with this article that the main driving force behind this is cost. Savings on time, savings on labor. That's what's kind of driving the system, although this is a secondary benefit. So what are farmers doing in this area to limit this and to save? I'll give some examples here. I can't put up all the photos because we have so many different crops to grow. This is a spring strip till. This is a one-pass system. We have two-pass systems. And this is generally sweet corn and grain corn that we're seeing go in here. Not much no-till or direct seeding with the corn crops. But they're planting into everything that you saw in that previous slide. This is they're planting into an alfalfa field coming out of production. About 30% of our dry bean acres have gone over to direct seeding, and this is generally done into hay fields that are coming out of production. So farmers take the first cutting off, which is the most profitable, and then they come back and direct seed the dry beans as a double crop. Works really well for them. Other double crops we've seen are buckwheat after green peas. We do grow buckwheat for the Pacific Rim countries. This is sweet corn after green peas. And most of this is strip-till, not because we couldn't direct seed it, but because the processed vegetables are actually harvested by the processors who don't really care about spreading residue uniformly. And so strip-till works much better because you can deal with big piles of residue that they leave in the fields. We got our forage crops, annual forage crops as double crops. This is alfalfa direct seeded into timothy. And even some of our vegetable crops have gone towards these high-residue systems. This is onions. This is mainly done to prevent sandblasting of the young onion seedlings in sandy ground. And even potatoes. This is a picture of a field, planted field of potatoes. This was just after that May 3rd windstorm. It did pretty well, even with that not too much residue, really. But other fields that didn't have any residue, the hills just blew shut. We had flat fields that farmers had to deal with the rest of the season. So on to one of our challenges comes from being so dry. And being really dry is great for putting up hay. It's great for field drying of our grain crops, which we do. We don't have any drying ability other than just leaving it out in the field. But it becomes a problem when we start using these high residue crops such as corn and wheat and leaving the residue on the surface because the residue doesn't go anywhere. In fact, this article went on to talk about an Arizona farmer using no-till for 8 years, and he said, the wheat straw in our no-till field really never goes away, which is exactly what we've kind of seen. And the reason is because we have such low relative humidities, which limits the moisture in the residue crop, in the residues, which limits decomposition. If you compare the relative humidities in Yakima versus a more humid area like Waterloo, Iowa, you can see here that when we have temperatures that are conducive to decomposition of the residue, our relative humidities are too low. This is I set this level at 75% because I couldn't find anything in the literature that showed decomposition below a relative humidity at 75%. So when we actually have water and good temperatures, we don't get any decomposition. We do see some in the spring and fall. We see a little bit more when you close the canopy. But, you know, compared to humid areas where you're getting decomposition during the season a lot more, we don't see that. So we have to deal with higher levels, especially somebody mentioned continuous corn. Nobody's tried continuous corn, at least no-till. They've tried a strip-till. Steve Norbert's here from Oregon. Down in his area, I heard of somebody trying strip-till continuous corn down there, and the residue just built up so fast that they didn't know exactly how to handle it. I think they went back to tillage. So that's one of our challenges, but we also have an opportunity. Because we started our organic matter started so low, we can actually increase our levels above what the native vegetation has given us. And this is exactly what's happened. Just adding water and high residue crops, we've seen an increase in the soil organic matter levels of these soils. And this is with full tillage except for your hay crops, where they're taking off the residue anyway. So we think that possibly with our high residue systems, we could increase our soil organic matter levels above what some people are calling the critical soil organic matter levels, below which you have some decreased function of the soil, which generally ranges, depending on the texture and the author that you read about this, between 1 and 3.5%. So possibly if we could, through these high residue systems, raise our organic matter levels above, 1.5%, 2% even, maybe I'm dreaming, 2.5%, maybe we get more aggregation, better aggregation, some aggregation, increased nutrient cycling, and possibly increased yields. It's too soon to tell, but maybe in 5 or 10 years I'll be back here telling you the answer to that one. With that, I'll take any questions you might have. Yes?
And don't you think just the introduction of irrigation water and crop rotation alone, you've already seen an increase in soil organic matter in your area?
Yeah. In fact, that one slide, if I can go backwards, this slide right here is from 1999. There weren't really any high residue cropping systems that were reducing tillage at that time. So this is just the effect of adding high yielding crops and water to that system. So we think we can do better now that we're using these reduced tillage systems. Any other questions?
Can you tell me that your water use efficiency and the amount of water that you have to need to keep that
Yes. The question was, do we see a reduced water need, I guess, in these crops? And yes, when we have that good residue cover, especially after wheat or corn where we have lots of residue, farmers are just, we haven't done any research on that. In fact, I'm the only one working on this, so I haven't been able to do that. But farmers, we have an area that's outside of our project irrigated areas where they have to use deep wells, and there they really watch their water carefully, and that's kind of what's driving them to these systems, is because they can use less water. They can take, I think Bob Klein was here, they take the E out of the ET, the evaporation out of the evapotranspiration. We have seen that. Any other questions? All right, time for lunch.